It was held in a great white room with tiers of crescent-shaped benches to one end for the spectators, a rostrum and desk for the adjudicator and his two assessors at the other, and in between, three great tables. At one sat Clitheroe and Dunn, and on a bench behind were myself and, to my astonishment, two of the prettiest yellow girls you ever saw, all in New Orleans finery. They were giggling to each other under the broad brims of their bonnets, and when I sat down they looked slantendicular and giggled more than ever. At the centre table were clerks, but the far table was empty until just before the proceedings began. By that time the public benches were crowded with folk, nearly all men and consequential people at that, talking and taking snuff and calling out to each other. And then a door behind the far table opened. In rolls Anderson, and to a rising buzz of chatter, John Charity Spring. Those pale eyes looked into mine, and I saw the scar on his forehead darken. Then the adjudicator came in, a little sharp-faced man who smiled briefly to Clitheroe and Anderson, shot quick accusing glances at everyone else, and told the nigger boy behind his chair to fetch some lime juice directly. Everyone fell silent, and the clerk called out the case for hearing of the bark Balliol College, the said bark taken by U.S. brig Cormorant and carrying aboard her certain slaves and slaving equipment in contravention of United States law, and that when challenged by a United States ship of war, the Balliol College fired upon her challenger, which is piracy under American law, that an attempt had been made to dispose of the slaves aboard the Balliol College by drowning them, and that the plaintiff sought the confiscation and condemnation of the Balliol College as a slave-trading vessel. That done, Clitheroe and Anderson and the adjudicator went into a great wrangle about procedure which lasted most of the morning. When they were at last ready to begin, it was Anderson who addressed the adjudicator. The plaintiff's case, he said, rested on the hope that he might show the Balliol College to be de facto American-owned. Secondly, that it was carrying slaves for America in contravention of American law. Thirdly, that in such illicit carriage it resisted arrest by an American ship of war, such resistance amounting to piracy.
"Unless I mistake the plaintiff's case," says he easily, "everything rests on the second point. If the Balliol College was not carrying slaves for the United States and so breaching American law, it is immaterial whether she is American-owned or no. Further, if she was not carrying slaves, her arrest was illegal, and such resistance as she showed cannot be held against her master or crew. The plaintiff must show that she was carrying slaves illegally." He beamed across the court. "May I hear counsel on the point?"
Clitheroe rose, frowning slightly, very austere. "That is the essence of the plaintiff's case, sir," says he. "We shall so demonstrate." He picked up a paper. "I have here the sworn deposition of Captain Abraham Fairbrother, U.S. Navy, who is presently at sea, sir, commander of the brig Cormorant, who effected this capture." Clitheroe continued with Fairbrother's statement, which was a fair, truthful tale, so far as I could see. Clitheroe then sat down and Anderson got up.
"Interesting," says he. "However, may I point out that the statement takes us no further so far as the status of the colored people on board the Balliol College is concerned. Negroes were found."
"And slave shackled, sir," says Clitheroe.
"Granted, sir, but the relation of one to the other is not determined by the statement. May I now enter my client's answer?"
Clitheroe nodded. The adjudicator snapped,
"Proceed."
And at Anderson's request, one of the clerks swore Spring in to testify. Then Anderson said,
"Tell us, Captain Spring, of your voyage in the Balliol College prior to and including the events in question."
Spring came to his feet and leaned his hands on the table. The harsh, grating voice took me back at once. I could smell the Balliol College again.
"I sailed from Brest in France with a cargo of trade goods for the Dahomey coast," says he. "There we exchanged them for native produce, largely palm oil, which I conveyed to Roatan in the Bay Islands. Thence I was proceeding in ballast for Havana,
when I was intercepted by an American brig and sloop who ordered me to heave to and fired upon me. I resisted, and my ship was presently boarded by these navy pirates who seized my ship, my person, and my crew. His voice was rising and the red scar burning. We were carried in chains to New Orleans. I myself had been grievously wounded in defense of my ship, and I have since been held here, my ship confined, and myself and my owners deprived of its use, with subsequent loss to ourselves. That I was carrying slaves in contravention of this country's enactments, I emphatically deny.